From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all white lights, peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, Frank Rich, drama critic turned political columnist, talks about being a producer on HBO's comedy Veep. And Matt Walsh, a regular on the show, tells us about improvising his way through Hollywood. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I am joined by my banter pal, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim. I understand you're back from the upfronts. Not sure if you need a leave of absence or strong medicine, but how'd it go?
Well, it is a tiring business. I watched the four big broadcast networks present their fall schedules, and in the case of NBC, certainly, it was not concise.
Not concise, and they've got a lot of problems, don't they?
Yeah, they have the most holes to fill. They go first, Bob Greenblatt and his number two, Jennifer Salke. You know, they're not what you would call super comfortable on stage. And, you know, a two-hour presentation and without a lot of natural spark. So I think the advertisers were starting to get a little fidgety by the time that was over.
This is probably a network that's looking more forward to the Olympics than anybody else because it will solve some of their problems in the short term. But I'm curious about Fox, which followed NBC. They've got their own hole to fill with House going off the air.
They have a couple of problems, which one of which is American Idol is starting to fade a bit, and the other is stalwart like House has finished its run. They are hoping that X Factor will perk up and fill that American Idol slot and grow into that slot. It hasn't certainly shown signs of doing that. And I would say that the presentation, which included a very wan appearance by Britney Spears, the new judge, was not tremendously encouraging. And then they have this drama. It's not coming till mid-season, but it has Kevin Bacon. It comes from Kevin Williamson, who did Dawson's Creek and Vampire Diaries. And that seemed to have a little bit of crackle.
And it also looked like more than half the new scripted shows were comedies. I wonder if ABC is going to be pretty reliant on those because they have their own significant problems to address.
Yeah, they do have problems. And, you know, the giant beacon of light for ABC right now is Modern Family, which is a huge hit. And the space behind Modern Family is a plum spot because, you know, you have that big audience sitting there. They've given it to a show called Neighbors. And in this one, the neighbors are aliens.
Wasn't that Third Rock from the Sun?
It feels Third Rock from the Sun-ish. I mean, it's different, but I got to say, none of these comedies, really almost across the board, seem to pop out. And to me, the Neighbors one on ABC following Modern Family, I didn't feel that the advertisers sat up and responded. You know, they had a package of clips from existing comedies like Modern Family, and those got more laughs than any of the new shows coming on.
That's not a good sign. And we haven't talked about CBS, but it sounded like one of the biggest things to come out of CBS was Les Moonves' attack of Dish Network and its plan to introduce what I suspect did not go over very well at all, the Auto Hop DVR, which skips all commercials.
Everybody had words about Dish Network and this plan to skip. I mean, it sounds great to me. It sounds great to you. But as Les Moonves pointed out, he can't pay for programming if people don't watch commercials and advertisers then don't buy commercials. So this is kind of a big problem. I cannot understand quite what Dish is thinking, that how this is supposed to work, because obviously the networks can say, you know, we're not going to supply you with these shows anymore. They announced this thing on the eve of the upfront presentations, and all the networks were really upset about it.
No, and I saw that Fox Network is no longer going to accept advertisements from Dish Network touting this new technology. So not only is it unpopular, but Dish Network may not be able to promote it either.
Yeah, this will be a war and it will go on for some time. And something else, John, that will go on for some time is this grinding News Corp scandal, which we've talked about many times involving Rupert Murdoch's empire, and a big development in that one this past week, too.
Perverting the course of justice. That's what Rebecca Brooks, who is one of Rupert Murdoch's top lieutenants, was charged with. And she was accused of doing a whole bunch of things. And this is, I think, the most serious turn in this entire scandal, with conspiring to remove boxes of material from News International, the newspaper division, of conspiring with her husband to conceal documents in computers. He famously was caught throwing a laptop into a trash bag. This feels like this is the real big shift in the story. And We've talked about it a lot. It seems to be accelerating. And I have to say, the next person I think is going to get caught in this and probably lose his job is James Murdoch.
Well, I don't know that Rupert Murdoch would ever willingly fire his son. People who know him tell me that no matter what, he will not want to do that. But the heat is on this development with respect to Rebecca Brooks, who was really supposed to be like the daughter Rupert Murdoch never had, although he does actually have a daughter, is the first criminal case against one of the top lieutenants of News Corp. And this is just the cover-up charge. This doesn't have to do with the phone hacking charges, the computer hacking charges, the bribery charges. So it is a safe bet that it will grind on. And of course, the next question would be, if you are Rebecca Brooks, who certainly didn't appear intimidated by this announcement, but you're seriously potentially looking at a conviction, jail time even, then what starts to come out if she or others are looking at prison?
No, it's looking more and more like Watergate, and we know how that ended.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And you can banter about Hollywood news anytime on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. Coming up later in the show, Matt Walsh, co-founder of the improv group Upright Citizens Brigade and part of the ensemble on HBO's Veep. But first, Frank Rich. Frank Rich was chief drama critic for the New York Times for 13 years before he became an astute op-ed columnist for that paper. Last year, he left the Times to write for New York Magazine. In 2008, Rich also became a creative consultant to HBO. That led him to a role as an executive producer on Veep, the new satire starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the vice president.
POTUS interruptus, that's what I call it. And I'm going to tell him
Madam
that.
Madam Vice President, you can't go back in there for future meetings.
What? No. Let me tell you something. You tell that for brains president
Madam
that
Vice
I
president,
had
to me for just one
No,
moment.
I won't listen to you for 1 second. I'm not interested in your information.
Please be quiet. The president is experiencing severe chest pains. We just got word from South Africa. You need to get to the West Wing immediately.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Veep was created by Armando Iannucci, who has done some lacerating political satire on British television, including the long-running series The Thick of It. Iannucci also wrote In the Loop, a movie about a U.S. president and a British prime minister who decide, somehow, to wage war in the Middle East. Veep is Iannucci's first American television show, and it's Frank Rich's first producing gig.
HBO had been looking for a while for some sort of smart show about Washington. And when I saw In the Loop, Armando Iannucci's movie about the run-up to the Iraq War, I was just agog about it. And I said, you know, this guy who's mainly known for being a brilliant satirist of British government does a great job with America, too, in the Loop and satirizing Foggy Bottom and American bureaucracy in Washington. And it turned out that recruiting Iannucci was harder than one might have thought because he'd had a terrible experience, unbeknownst to me, at network television a few years earlier. The Thick of It had been made into an Americanized pilot and then killed, and he'd had a rotten time doing it.
Who was the perpetrator of that?
I don't know. I don't know who the executives were, but he's publicly, including in a really interesting Ian Parker profile in The New Yorker, talked about how he was not treated well. The pilot was directed by Christopher Guest, but he talks about dozens of network executives coming in. And so he was, you know, not dying to be back in American TV, but ultimately he did come up with this proposal for Veep that led to me, you know, meeting him and talking with him. And very soon after, Julia Louis-Dreyfus was cast, and then we were off and running to make a pilot.
And what was your job?
My job was to talk to him about it and suggest ideas for it and begin the process of essentially developing it. I mean, there was no script yet, and then, you know, my job became, like, I guess, producers on many shows, or executive producers as opposed to line producers, looking at story, looking at script, making suggestions, giving my 2 cents about casting, being involved with every stage of the process, with the understanding that at HBO, the auteur is the auteur, and Armando, you know, decision is really final and everything, no matter what a producer or an HBO executive has to say about it, you know, within reason.
Would you get as granular as saying this line should read this way or let me write this line?
No, I have no aspiration to be a TV writer. But sure, everyone had opinions, including, by the way, the cast, the crew. Everyone has opinions about whether a joke works. But keep in mind, he has an incredibly interesting and, I think, atypical writing process. He writes a script, or he and his writers. He has a team of writers. The principal one is Simon Blackwell, whom he sort of co-created this with. But they write a script. Everyone gives their two cents about it, from HBO executives involved to people like me. But then he has a rehearsal process where, while the script keeps being rewritten and he keeps trying to improve it through various drafts, the normal process, he puts the cast up on its feet and has them rehearse what was written, but then do it without the scripts and use lines they remember when they want to from the original script, and then do their own lines. And a lot of them have UCB and Second City training, including Julia. And so they're often incredibly creative, and the writers sit around and take notes on what they come up with, and some of that finds its way into the final scripts too. And so there was a very long rehearsal process at every step of the way, and the scripts were just generated over and over and over again, with everyone giving their two cents. So it was really kind of a remarkable communal process. And as one of the writers said to me, this cast was like having a second team of writers.
Have you found yourself, I mean, obviously the creator of the show has political DNA of some kind to writing about it. Do you find yourself, you know, weighing in, saying, well, I don't think in Washington, you know, because you are from D.C. and you have some insight into the culture?
I would imagine it'd be very hard for me to work on the show if I had a different vision of Washington than the show did. But what I loved about this from the beginning is that I felt Armando, who's a total political junkie, he's reading all the same blogs and looking at the same political websites the rest of us do, and Twitter and everything else. And so he's very on top of it. But what he has that is so rare in Hollywood treatments or American show business treatments of Washington is he is not romantic about it. He sees that Washington, a lot of it's very provincial, a lot of it is very petty, and a lot of it is incredibly unglamorous. And one thing that won my heart very early on, he wrote a hilarious memo to the production designers. I mean, it wasn't meant to be hilarious, it was serious, but he said, you know, everyone is dressed 10 years behind, except for one character, the character Dan Egan, this up-and-coming political operative.
Right, the shark.
The shark, played by Reed Scott. He said, he's 3 years ahead of everybody else, which means he's still
seven years
behind fashion. And so it's not the West Wing. It's not the American president or commander-in-chief.
Right, not at all.
The offices look shabby. There's, you know, detritus all over them. And it really rings true to me. And as far as the politics of the piece goes, you never learn what political party Selina Meyer is in.
Right.
You never meet the president. And the truth is, it doesn't matter, because anyone who's lived in Washington knows, and I certainly knew this as a kid even, you know, administrations come and go, parties come in and out of power, but the kind of self-serving, backstabbing, petty behavior of ambitious people, sometimes with very tiny bits of turf, never changes.
Frank Rich is a creative consultant to HBO, where he's an executive producer on the new comedy series Veep, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus. He's also an executive producer on a forthcoming documentary about Stephen Sondheim, and he writes for New York Magazine about politics and culture. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Great to talk with you. I'm just a pill, yes, I'm only a pill.
As Frank Rich just told us, many of the actors on Veep are such seasoned improvisers that they function almost as additional writers on the series. Matt Walsh is one of those actors and an improv veteran, one of the founders of the improv troupe Upright Citizens Brigade. Walsh was a recurring character on the NBC sitcom Outsourced, but may be best known as that doctor in The Hangover.
You kept talking about some wedding that you just came from. at the Best Little Chapel. You guys kept saying how sick the wedding was and getting all crazy about it. Okay, I hope this helps, fellas. I really have to leave.
But do you know what Best Little Chapel, you know where that is?
I do. It's at the corner of Get a Map and F*** Off. I'm a doctor, not a tour guide. Figure it out yourself, okay? You're big boys.
Walsh's latest role is playing Mike McClintock, the disheveled press secretary to Julia Louis-Dreyfus as Vice President Selina Myers. When Walsh came to the KCRW studio, he looked a lot more put together than his character on Veep. So I asked him how they schlub him up for the part.
The wardrobe guy makes sure that my suits are very tight-fitting, and I think the backstory that we sort of came up is that he bought his graduation suits 20 years ago, and they're good. They're like Brooks Brothers, but he's been wearing them ever since as he's gained weight, and he might have bought some new ties and shirts, but the suits are the same.
And they do some stuff to your hair, then they...
Yeah, they want the hair long, and they kind of pull it out a little bit. You know, they like it a little messier.
They schlub you up. They do. They make you look like...
Yeah.
Like you walked in, and I'm like, who's this guy?
Yeah, they make you look fatigued, like you've been working 24 hours a day, yes.
So Frank Rich has told us, one of the producers on the show, Frank Rich, has told us that you have an unusual way of developing the script for Veep, and that you sort of improvise and the writers take notes. Is that... I mean, how much do they give you to start out with, and then what do you do?
It is a very improv-friendly show. We probably put in 6 weeks of rehearsal over the course of the first season. We spent 2 weeks in England where we were given the first four or five episodes.
Because the writer...
The creator, Armando Iannucci, and all the writers are British. So everyone lives in England. So we went to England for 2 weeks, had a lovely stay at a very swanky hotel. And every day we would get in the room, we'd read the script, and then we would put scenes on their feet. We'd put the scripts down. And I think in the beginning, it was useful for the writers to kind of hear our take on the character and also sort of an American delivery, if you will, like they wanted to hear our voice and then they could write to it. And then a lot of the improv that happened in the room, the next draft, we would have some of our quotes or lines in there. And then as the process went, we would work on things that Armando felt, this doesn't quite work. Why don't we put this on its feet and put the scripts down? And then we would play with it and then tease it out, as he likes to say, tease out the moment. And then when we actually get to film, he affords us one or two loose takes where he basically says, you know, just have fun, but keep it moving, you know.
Your character has a fake dog to get out of work.
Yes. That was based on, they did some preliminary interviews with some D.C. Employees, congressmen, et cetera. And there was a gentleman in one of the offices they went to who had maintained this fictional dog for many years just so he wouldn't have to stay late at night. He said, I'm sorry, I got to go home. I got to feed the dog.
Your character actually has a picture of the fake dog in his wallet.
Yes, he does, that he got from Google Images. Yeah. And he has a fake name for the fake dog.
And that was all, like, they presented you with that was your character.
Yes, that was something in the original drafts. Yes, it was.
So when you were cast in Veep, did you have to read for that?
The project came about and I heard about it through my agent. And I've always been a fan of the Alan Partridge show. And then I learned that Armando was
the British show that he, the
creator with Steve Coogan. That was one of my favorite shows forever. And he also made In the Loop. So I was desperate to get in the room and I did get in the room. And then after the first audition, they were hinting that they wanted you to improvise. And then the second audition, lo and behold, Julia's in the chair and I'm improvising with Julia and she's super sweet and very funny and wants to play. And so it was very, very relieving for me as an improviser to be able to like show something that isn't on the page.
Coming up after a short break, Matt Walsh talks about his roles with Upright Citizens Brigade and The Daily Show. To make a comment about today's program, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. The cast of Veep is packed with comedy talent, including, of course, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Tony Hale, who played Buster on Arrested Development, and our guest today, Matt Walsh.
Come on, let's go somewhere. Let's meet the public.
You want to normalize it?
Yes, exactly. I want to meet some regular normals. Where are we going to find them?
Photo op at the normals and the normalistas.
Yes, there's a book fair Adams Morgan.
No. You're not going to get a good photo holding a book. You need some active.
It's like kids read or something, like read.
Kids are unpredictable. They wet their pants.
Keep it simple.
Yeah,
it's frozen yogurt. All right, is huge in this town right now. All right, it's hot out. Let's go to a store. There's one that I know that I go to all the time on U Street. It's owned by three generations of African Americans. I mean, there's a narrative built right in.
Excellent. Home run. It's perfect. Done deal.
Great.
We can totally normalize with those guys. That's what we're gonna do. Make it happen, guys.
All right, we're going to a yogurt shop.
Walsh is one of those actors you've seen a lot of places, including such Todd Phillips movies as Old School and The Hangover. Walsh has a long history in improv and, along with Matt Besser, Amy Poehler, and Ian Roberts, founded the improv troupe and school known as the Upright Citizens Brigade, or UCB. So, Upright Citizens Brigade, what is the origin of that?
The name or the group?
Well, both, I suppose.
Both? Okay.
I was thinking of group, but I'll go with name.
I don't know that I have an answer for the name. Upright Citizens Brigade is a sketch group I started with Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, and a few other guys like Adam McKay and Horatio Sands back in the early 90s in Chicago. And then it had various incarnations. And then in 1994, it basically became Matt Walsh, Ian Roberts, Matt Besser, and Amy Poehler. And we moved to New York in 1996, and we had three sketch shows and an improv show. And
this is at a theater, like
at a real theater in New York. And then we got a show on Comedy Central that had three seasons. Now we have a theater of our own in New York. We have two in New York, and we have one in Los Angeles, where we teach improv, and then we have comedy 7 nights a week.
And how much time can you spend on that?
Me personally, I don't spend very much time on it. We have people who sort of manage the business and make me aware, make us aware of issues or things we need to weigh in on.
You launched it, and now it goes.
Now it lives on its own, yeah. And all the great thing is all the comedians there are finding their own way and developing their own talents, and the audience loves them and doesn't even know who, you know, I am or we are. It's its own thing. It's like a school. There's always a new class, and the seniors go on, and the freshmen are carrying the weight.
Is improv like a thing that was like opens doors in television?
I think in some areas it does. Like if you're Aaron Sorkin, I don't think they want you to. If you're doing an Aaron Sorkin script, they don't want you to improvise.
He kind of wants you to say the words. Huh?
Yeah, because he's a brilliant writer. And I think on our show, the writers are brilliant, but I also think they value the process of improvising together. And does improv open doors in comedy? I think there are directors who want you to add to what they've created. So I think it can help. And it certainly can help in the audition room if you're giving a little extra to what – because I think in the audition room, oftentimes, they don't quite know what the character is. They don't know who the guy is, or they don't know – there are elements missing. So if you add something and it hits – then you're doing yourself a favor. And I think it does help you in that, in the audition room.
Is it something that helps you to get up and keep going or change things up? I'm just wondering how it contributes, because it seems like a lot of people come from improv and have done. I mean, Lenny and Squiggy, going back to Laverne and Shirley, like those were improv guys, right?
I love Lenny and Squiggy. I think improv, if you study it, teaches you to listen, which I think is super valuable, because a lot of people have their own comic ideas and they're rushing towards them and they're missing things that are right in front of them. And I think it makes you a collaborator, which I think is really valuable, because most of – obviously sitcoms are ensembles, and what makes them beautiful is like the characters' interactions. And I think improv is built on that. And I think improv teaches you acting in a roundabout way, because you play things as real as you can. I think good improv is like absurd things. Yeah, you commit, exactly. You get an absurd premise or an absurd idea, and you commit as if this was real, and the next thing you know, you've become a good actor. As opposed to going to like a very strict school, which might be intimidating, I think a lot of improvisers learn to act in front of an audience, so it may take a little longer, and I think it sneaks up on you, but I think improv teaches you very good acting.
So you've done Todd Phillips movies. Mm-hmm. You've done The Daily Show. Mm-hmm. You've done a broadcast show, and now you're doing this one. Do people sort of now have a specific notion of who you are, as opposed to they recognize you from somewhere?
I think for a long time, the thing I was recognized for most recently was The Hangover, because it was such a crazy hit. Like you can't predict.
That was a huge hit.
You can't predict a movie being that popular. So for a while it was like I was the doctor in Hangover, but now I think people know that I'm funny and they say things like I like your work as opposed to, you know, say that line from the Hangover.
You're that guy from the Daily Show.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've been fortunate to do many things, so now I think people know, maybe they know my name a little bit. I don't know. Probably not. But they know that I'm not just in that one movie, probably.
I have to ask you,
sure.
Is The Daily Show fun?
It was fun. I particularly loved the field pieces, and I was very stressed out in the studio.
Because I could see it either being kind of like the greatest gig ever or just brutal and terrifying.
elements were terrifying. The live stuff I found tricky for myself, but it was really fun. I mean, I lived in New York. I could ride my bike to work. And you got introduced as Matt Walsh, and you got to sit at the desk, and there was a lot of fun, and you got to travel. I loved to travel, so there was a lot of fun elements to it. You know,
seems like, I mean, I guess the show just has become. It was on the way to becoming what it now is. So
I think
you were early.
Exactly, I was early on. I think it was still a transition from the Daily Show to the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and I think that show is Jon's voice. Like, he is so great at breaking down the news and telling jokes about it. There's nobody better. So that sort of dominates everything. And now, and back when I was there, there weren't even like guest interviews that would sit at the table. It was basically a desk, you know, John would talk to camera, then he'd bring, you know, Colbert or Carell out, and then there'd be a field piece where some of the other, you know, reporters would jump in. And now it's just completely John's show.
What a ridiculous alumni association.
Yeah, I know. I know. What a great opportunity to do a show. Yeah, everybody who does that show seems to be still working.
So you directed a movie, High Road?
That's right.
You described it as structured improv. Is that kind of like a Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of thing? Like, in this scene, this will happen?
Yes, I think Curb is structured improv. You get an outline of what's going to happen in the scene, and then the dialogue is up to you how you say it or how you get from point A to point B. So we had I wrote a movie with a friend of mine, Josh Weiner, and we took that movie completely scripted and boiled that down to 70 scenes. And then beneath each scene heading, we had more elaborate descriptions than, say, a Curb. Because I think in Curb, it's sometimes one sentence, Larry pisses off valet or Larry steals keys from valet.
It's that bare bones.
It is. It's very bare bones. Yeah, they really trust their actors, or they want...
He has to figure out how he's pissing off the valet.
Yes, they want
that
surprise.
That would scare me.
Yeah. So we had like very elaborate, like two-paragraph descriptions that track sort of character arc and emotional and what characters are there and what the preceding and next scenes are. So we shot it two summers ago over like 15 days and classic indie, no money, very little budget. Fortunately, I had a lot of friends like Rob Riggle and Joe Latrulio and Ed Helms came by for a day and completely favors, you know, Abby Elliott. Everybody just wanted to make, you know, a funny low budget movie. So it turned out well.
Matt Walsh is currently on the HBO series Veep. He's also a founding member of the improv sketch comedy troupe Upright Citizens Brigade. And his movie High Road is available on DVD. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Long, long ago, I took an improv class with the then unknown Lisa Kudrow and Conan O'Brien. Our producer, Darby Maloney, has actually heard about that a few times, so she came up with the idea of seeing whether I would dare to attempt some improv with Matt Walsh. You can see the video on our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.